The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry. Actually, I came within seconds of accidentally launching this program as the Trumpet Daily Shoe on the Facebook stream. Maybe that's an idea for a new line of merchandise. I noticed we have one of the old coffee cups here. I think Mr. Flurry mentioned those on the rest of the show yesterday, but maybe we should start selling Trumpet, your official Trumpet Daily shoes as well. That won't make my typo a bit better. But anyway, I barely avoided that. But lots of news to get to as usual. There's all kinds of significant developments across Europe that I want to get to. But I thought I'd start with a rundown of stories that are, you know, basically so dumb you couldn't make them up. You could almost have a segment, I guess, or a regular segment of this show, You Couldn't Make It Up, or Tales from an Upside Down World, or something like that. But first we have, last week, the United Nations Economic and Social Council, they had to elect a new member of the Commission on the Status of Women. So who do you think, which country was elected to serve on this UN Commission for Women? Now the council states that this Commission for the Status of Women, that it is the principal global interventional body exclusively dedicated to the promotion of gender equality and the empowerment of women. So which country do you think the United Nations voted to empower women? You know, maybe Germany, they've got a female chancellor, they've had a female defense minister. Maybe the United States with a female vice president. Well, no, it was Iran. They chose Iran. Iran will be joining Pakistan and China for a 4-year term on the council. So what kind of laws does this paragon of women's equity have? Well, married women can't get passports or leave the country without permission from their husbands. And if they're not married, then they're under the supervision of their fathers. They can't go out in public without face covering or head covering because of mandatory hijab laws. Those who do go out without some kind of covering of their hair face jail time. Amnesty International in 2020 said that the authorities failed to criminalize domestic violence. It talked about there being early and forced marriage and other gender-based violence against women and girls, which remain widespread. So I'm sure you can expect the United Nations to continue to lecture Britain and America about being racist, sexist societies. But that gives you an idea of the credibility that they have. This is, it really is man's last best hope for peace, and it has been a complete failure. And this, of course, is just the latest in a whole load of ridiculous appointments from the United Nations. But sticking with this, you couldn't make it up type theme, the Washington Post, they're shutting down their database of presidential fact checks, because there's so much truth around. There's so much truth. We don't need to worry about maintaining a database of things that the president has said is false. Glenn Kessler, he's the editor and chief writer of The Fact Checker. He said, well, they're going to keep fact checking Mr. Biden, but they're not going to keep a database anymore like they did under President Trump. He talked about the enormous workload of running such a database. You know, in 2017, they created some kind of interactive graphic to track, quote, every suspicious claim by the president in his first 100 days in office. But not doing that anymore. We don't need to have a big graphic tracker. We don't need to have something that keeps track of how many things that a president have said that is wrong. He tweeted, maintaining the Trump database over 4 years required about 400 additional 8-hour days over 4 years beyond our regular jobs for 3 people. Biden is off to a relatively slow start, but who knows what will happen. We'll keep doing fact checks, just not a database. So again, not really. It's just not worth the effort for. We don't need to do it for Joe Biden. It's only worth it for President Trump. It didn't take long at all for them to cancel that. More under this, you couldn't make it up type news. You have Nicole Hannah-Jones. She is the author of the 1619 Project. This project that basically says that all of America's history is racist and slavery is the foundation of America. She is going to be joining the faculty of the University of North Carolina over summer. She's going to teach at the UNC Chapel Hill Hussman School of Journalism in Media beginning in July. So if you want to see why US media media in America, media around the world is so bad, well, that's a good place to start. This is who they go out and reach for to teach journalism. You know, if you think back to her 1619 project, even left-wing academics ripped it to shreds and exposed basic factual errors. The New York Times had to publish several apologies and retractions from this 1619 project. A group of 24 top academics, they signed a letter stating, "The duplicity of attempting to alter the historical record in a manner intended to deceive the public is as serious an infraction against professional ethics as a journalist can commit." So she committed the most serious infraction of professional ethics in journalism, and the decision is that she should be invited to come and teach journalism at America's universities. But that's not the craziest academic appointment that we've seen over the last day or two. Tulane University in New Orleans, they're lining up guest speakers for their course on media polarization and public policy impacts. So just from this university, this is a course that looks up how media polarization, fake news, and the economics of the news business impact public policymaking in Washington, D.C. So who is there that's an expert on fake news that they could invite to come and talk to their students as a guest lecturer? Well, they decided on Hunter Biden. Hunter Biden is the expert. I mean, I guess in a way, he is an expert in fake news. He was right in the center of it. You had that story breaking about his laptop, only for all of the media. You've seen the montages. The president, Joe Biden, who was presidential candidate back then, all of them completely denying the story, only for it to be quietly come out after the election that, yes, it was all completely true. So he's going to be lecturing on fake news. So Iran will be lecturing the world on human rights. The author of the 1619 Project will lecture the world about journalism. And Hunter Biden will teach about fake news. It seems like there's not really much point for satire in today's world. I remember we did have an article several years back about our upside down world. And that really is what we're looking in, where we're living in, where truth is called error. And all of these people that that lie but benefit the left's agenda, they get promoted. Well, also, just over the last day or so, we have another instance of Joe Biden saying the quiet part out loud. We had a rare event yesterday. He was actually speaking to the press, but he was afraid that he'd get in trouble for it. Here's what he said, clip one.
AstraZeneca, will you make it faster to get for them to get the vaccine, the vaccines we will get soon? India, they're suffering at
what
this moment.
What do you say to the folks in India? Will you make
I'm sorry, I'm going to, this last question I'll take, and I'm really going to be in trouble.
And then he goes on to kind of talk about India, but he's going to get in trouble. Who's he going to get in trouble with? He's the president. Saying the quiet part out loud, more evidence that he's not the one in control. This is a radical left administration. They're going to get done what they want to get done. And at the end of the day, really, it is President Obama that is behind it. And I think there's more and more realization of that. This is a quick clip from Tucker Carlson a few days ago, talking about exactly this same kind of thing on Fox News.
This show, in the interest of accuracy, will cease referring to the White House or anything associated with it, the entire executive branch of government, as the, quote, Biden administration. And the reason we're changing it is not to make a statement, but merely to reflect reality. Joe Biden, whatever his merits as a human being, has no active role in running the U.S. government. Everyone knows that. Everyone pretends otherwise. But it's true. And so henceforth, we will refer to it as the administration, the White House, the Kamala Harris administration, the third and former radical Obama administration.
And that's what it really is, the third and former radical Obama administration. So that's a quick roundup of some of the more amusing bits of news. There is an important story there with this being another Obama administration. And we have talked about that a fair bit on this show. There is an attack on the United States behind this. But there's also important news going on beyond, outside the United States. And that's what I wanted to spend the bulk of the time on. Some very significant bits of news. And all of these events happening in America are really important. But at the same time, we can't lose sight of some of the things going on outside of America. And there's some really interesting developments going on in Europe right now that are really going to impact the United States, and they're going to lead to some major changes all around the world. And I want to start by talking about France. We saw yet another terrorist attack in France over the last week. France is just kind of going through this steady drip of terrorist attacks. I think it's almost to the point, well, it is at the point really, that these terrorist attacks no longer make the news prominently. If you're in the UK or if you're in the US, if you're outside of France, it's kind of reached the point now where these quote unquote small attacks are pretty much normal. And the media doesn't really bother highlighting them so much. But they're still a very big deal in France. This is something that the French are very upset about. But just starting with this latest piece of news, this came from April 23rd, where a terrorist came into a police station in a French town, so into the police station and stabbed a woman to death. Just a brazen attack going straight into that police station. Yamil Gorchini, who was a Tunisian man in his mid-30s, and he murdered a 49-year-old administrative assistant at the station. She was a mother of two, and she was kind of just coming out of the police station to put money in a parking meter, and then this individual followed her inside the station and stabbed her. And the terrorist was shot dead soon after that, but the terrorist, he was shouting, Allahu Akbar, Allah is great, before the attack happened. He was going to a police station. His phone showed he'd been watching videos of pro-jihad songs immediately before the attack. So this was a terrorist attack. The French President Emmanuel Macron, he tweeted, she was a police officer. Stephanie, the victim, was killed in her police station in on the already hurt lands of Yvelines. The nation stands alongside her family, colleagues, and law enforcement. In the fight against Islamist terrorism, we will not give up. But you can see these attacks changing France quite dramatically, and there've been a number of stories along these lines in the aftermath of this attack. And since last autumn, you've had these coming pretty commonly. So in September, you had a Pakistani immigrant attack two people with a meat cleaver outside the former offices of the Charlie Hebdo magazine. If you think back a few years, there was a major terrorist attack on the Charlie Hebdo magazine. October 16th, 2020, you had that famous case of a Chechen refugee beheading a teacher, Samuel Paty. October 30th, a Tunisian immigrant who'd been in France for about a month, he killed three people in a church in Nice. And like I said, this is having an impact. And you've had some much bigger terrorist attacks in France, the Bataclan attack several years ago. But it makes me think of, we've been writing on this and talking about the changes that this is going to bring in European society. I went back and had a look. This is a quote from Stratfor's, back then he was Stratfor, I guess now he's at Geopolitical Futures, George Friedman, after the Charlie Hebdo attacks in 2015, writing about the problems here. And he wrote, enough Muslims share that fervency, talking about some of these terrorists, to endanger the lives of those they despise, and this tendency towards violence cannot be tolerated by either their Western targets or by Muslims who refuse to subscribe to a jihadist ideology. And there's no way to distinguish those who might kill from those who won't. The Muslim community might be able to make this distinction, but a 25-year-old European or American policeman cannot. And the Muslims either can't or won't police themselves. Therefore, we are left in a state of war. French Prime Minister Manuel Valls, again, this is back from 2015, has called this a war on radical Islam. If only they wore uniforms or bore distinctive birthmarks, then fighting only the radical Islamist would not be a problem. But Valls' distinction notwithstanding, the world can either accept periodic attacks or see the entire Muslim community as a potential threat until proven otherwise. These are terrible choices, but history is filled with them. It is difficult to imagine another outcome save for another round of ghettoization and deportation. This is repulsive to our European sensibilities now, but certainly not alien to European history. Unable to distinguish between radical Muslims from other Muslims, Europe will increasingly and unintentionally move in this direction. And he concluded, we are entering into a place that has no solutions. So, you know, he's saying we're going to, he was forecasting back then, saying, well, we're going to see Europe changing. We're going to see Europe do things that they would previously have considered unthinkable to try and stop these attacks. And we quoted that. We quoted that. That came from, I think, a Trumpet Print article. And we talked about how these attacks are going to push Europe and France in an extreme direction. And that was a few years ago. And I remember getting people writing in and saying, no, that's never going to happen. That you're horribly wrong and even racist to even forecast such a thing. But look at what is happening in France right now. The French public are being pushed more and more to these kind of solutions that would have been considered unthinkable before with each passing attack. People aren't just going to accept periodic stabbings as the new normal. That's not happening. And, well, if those changes, if standing up to this means doing things they would have once never considered, well, they're going to do them. Alain Franchot, he's a former editor of the Le Monde newspaper, he said, and he's talking about the extremist leader Marine Le Pen. He said, Marine Le Pen does not have to say anything. Each time France is hit by terrorism, the extreme right benefits. And Le Pen leads the party that was once the National Front. I think they changed their name. Now I'm trying to remember where they, is it National Rally, something like that. Now, she gets called extreme right. I think if you look at her economic policies, extreme left would probably be a better way of putting it, but she's certainly on the fringe of Europe, of French politics. Certainly previously considered unthinkable that she could be president of France, completely beyond the pale. It used to be, the way French elections work is unless somebody gets over 50% of the vote to be president, which rarely happens because you usually have three or four different popular candidates, whoever comes in comes first and second go head to head in a runoff. And usually everybody else would gang together to defeat Le Pen and the extremist groups. That might not happen now. She is really growing in support with each attack. This is from the New York Times over the weekend. In France, where tensions are simmering after a series of terrorist attacks, Ms. Le Pen's rhetoric resonates. The left, which is in tatters, bereft of an effective leader or message, appears to have no answer for the moment. Then opinion polls on next year's presidential election show Ms. Le Pen, who has dropped calls for France to exit the European Union and the Euro as part of an effort to bring her message closer to the mainstream, in a tight race with Mr. Macron. So she could be the next leader, potentially next year. This article continues, a runoff between the two of them is seen as the most likely scenario for the second round of the vote, because many disillusioned left-of-centre Macron voters in 2017 say they will under no circumstances vote for him again. Assumptions that France would never lurch to the far right now appeal much more fragile. And The Spectator made a similar point over the weekend. It starts with this article, with the author talking about some of his connections with France, his recollections where back in 2002, someone admitted that he had voted for Jean-Marie Le Pen, it was the father of this other Marine Le Pen. And this started an argument, and this young man said, well, his car had been broken into three times, and the police in Marseille had no interest in addressing the problem, and so voting for Le Pen was his protest. And then the Spectator writes, 20 years later, and it is no longer unusual to discover young people who vote for Le Pen's daughter Marine. A poll this month revealed 29% of 25 to 34-year-olds intended to vote for her party, an increase in 6% of those who backed her at the 2017 election. According to this poll, only 20% of this demographic will vote for Emmanuel Macron, a drop of 9% from the election 4 years ago. So in the United States and in Britain, we're used to this age demographic, the millennials, 25 to 34. We're used to them being pretty left-wing and supporting left-wing candidates. You look here and actually you've got almost a third supporting Marine Le Pen, this much more extreme candidate that wants to do much more for France to crack down on Islam and to keep Muslims out. And this is a position, you know, you wouldn't get remotely close to. I don't know whether you'd struggle to get 2 or 3% in Britain and America from that age demographic choosing her. I don't know, maybe more. There are still definitely some right-wing people in that age demographic. And again, as I said, in a lot of ways, she's kind of got more in common with some of the far left with her views on trying to nationalize everything. But still, that's a pretty surprising figure that even this age group, the kind of the stereotypical view, I think, has been of older people voting for her party. But that's not the case. 25 to 34-year-olds, as this article in The Spectator points out, that they saw some of their friends killed in the big attacks in 2015 and 2016. And while this author even talks about how, well, it's, you know, stereotypically, again, people consider it the poor voting for this age group. But that's not true either. And he talks about how being on the train talking to a director of human resources in a big international company. And he writes that she had no inhibition in telling me she would be voting for Le Pen for the sake of her teenage daughters, for whom she increasingly feared. So France's politics is changing. And you had another remarkable development in France. There was an open letter signed by 20 former generals that's just come out, and 1,500 members of the military, the police, the gendarmerie, calling, almost threatening a coup if the nation, if the leaders don't do more to stand up to Islam and to radical Islam and stop these attacks, calling on the French leaders to safeguard the nation. It was an open letter published in Valeurs Actuelles. It's a right-wing news magazine, and it's been, even since being published, it's been gaining more and more signatures. And they're warning that a failure to act now risks military uprising and civil war. And it sounds, you know, it sounds extreme, but these extremes, that's the views. This is the new normal in France. Leaders talking about, military leaders talking about a coup. I've got some quotes from that letter here. So it writes, "The hour is serious. France is in danger. Several mortal dangers threaten it. We, who even in retirement remain soldiers of France, cannot, in the current circumstances, remain indifferent to the fate of our beautiful country. Our tricolor flags are not just a piece of cloth. They symbolize the tradition through the ages of those whatever their skin color or their faith, served France and gave their lives for it. On these flags, we find in gold letters the word honor and fatherland. However, our honor today lies in the denunciation of the disintegration which strikes our homeland." And they go on to talk about the radical left. They say they despise our country, its traditions, its cultures, and they want to see it dissolved by taking away its past and its history. They attack through statues, ancient military and civilian glories, and by analyzing words that are centuries old. And you kind of wish for some of that, you'd see more of that spirit with some of the US military criticizing the radical left. But then they go on to talk about radical Islam. They talk about Islamism and the suburban hordes in this letter, and they said that this leads to the detachment of multiple plots to the nation, to transform it into territorial subjects, territory subject to dogmas contrary to our constitution. And it launches a blistering attack, really, at the French leaders. It says, "Perils are mounting. Violence is increasing day by day. Who would have predicted 10 years ago that a professor would one day, or a teacher would one day be beheaded when he left college or left school? However, we servants of the nation, who have always been ready to put our skin at the end of our engagement as the military state demanded, cannot be passive spectators in the face of such actions. Those who run our country must therefore find the courage to eradicate these dangers. To do that, this is often sufficient to apply existing laws without weakness. Do not forget that, like us, a large majority of our fellow citizens are overwhelmed by your dabblings and guilty silences. They write, so, ladies and gentlemen, enough procrastination. The hour is serious, the work is colossal. Do not waste time, and know that we are ready to support policies which will take into consideration the safeguarding of the nation. On the other hand, if nothing is done, laxity will continue to spread inexorably in society, ultimately causing an explosion. And the intervention of our active comrades in a perilous mission of protecting our civilizational values and safeguarding of our compatriots on the national territory. As we can see, it is no longer time to procrastinate. Otherwise, tomorrow the civil war will put an end to this growing civil war will put an end to this country in growing chaos, and the deaths for which you bear the responsibility will number in the thousands. So, a strong call there. For France to stand up to this problem, and that's a like I said, it's an extreme measure for them to kind of allude to a coup like that. People are talking to the, pointing to this statement as a kind of a subtle coup threat, talking about them saying, well, our active duty comrades might have to intervene if nothing happens, threatening a military takeover. And it comes just a week before the bicentenary of the death of Napoleon, who, of course, seized power in France in a coup. I think it was also on the anniversary of an attempted coup from some French officers over Algeria. But Marine Le Pen is welcoming this. She wrote those that wrote this letter, I invite you to join our actions and take part in the battle that is opening, and is above all the battle of France. As a citizen and as a woman politician, I share your suffering. Now, the government is threatening to punish those responsible. The French defense minister, Florence Parly, he said that these are unexpected actions. There will be consequences, naturally. He said the military are not there to campaign, but to defend France and protect the French. That's what she said. For those who have violated the duty of reserve, sanctions are planned. And if they are active soldiers among the signatories, I ask the chief of staff of the armed forces to apply the rules. And I think this article from the EU Observer notes that the French, according to French law, retired officers could lose their rank and pension if they violated their duties. So those that are speaking out are putting a lot on the line here. But if there's another big attack in France, what's that going to do? Where are they going to go from here? If they're talking about military coups and radical solutions to this problem already, Europe is changing, and it's changing quickly. And Germany is another important place to watch for these changes. We had a Key of David over the weekend on Germany. We've got a trumpet brief that I think has just gone out in the last few minutes. We were delayed a little bit from the normal sending time of last night. From Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Flurry on the subject of Germany. There's something critical to watch over the summer as they get ready for their elections in September. So we'll take a quick break, and when we get back, we will talk about Germany and what is coming here. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course is a distance learning program that makes the Bible clear and understandable. The correspondence course enables enrollees to learn what the Bible itself says about subjects that affect you and the world you live in. This fascinating Bible course highlights and proves what the Bible says about morality, war, religion, terrorism, and other current events, focusing on the root causes of this world's many problems facing man, as well as their solutions. The Bible and this course also focuses on the reason mankind was created in the first place, the way to happiness, accomplishment, and fulfillment, as well as the truth behind important doctrinal questions, such as what happens after we die, the nature of God, the resurrection, the millennium, and other critical subjects. enroll today in the Herbert W. Armstrong Bible Correspondence Course. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to The Trumpet Daily radio show, and I'd just like to second that advertisement for the Bible Correspondence course there. It's really easy to sign up for. It's never been more easy and convenient to do the Bible Correspondence course. You can get print copies of the each lesson of the magazine, of the correspondence courses. Then there's a pretty short, quick test every four issues. You can now just do that test online. Before you had to kind of fill in a bubble sheet and send that in, and sometimes that would take a few weeks to get turned around. But now you can do that all online. You can get your next set of copies, and it's just a fantastic way to get an overview of the Bible, of what the Bible teaches. It can be so easy for gaps in our knowledge to develop and things that we don't know that we don't know. And having this course that's lined out to give you just a fantastic overview of the Bible is a great place to learn about that. So if you haven't enrolled in that already, I'd really encourage you to do that. I've taken quite a few of the lessons. I'm going back over some of them. You've been going back over some of them as well, but it's a great place to learn a lot about the Bible. Well, before the break, I promised we'd talk about Germany. Germany is going to vote for a new chancellor on September 26th, and it's really remarkable what people who are watching this election are saying. We'll get to some of those quotes shortly, but the incumbent Angela Merkel, she will be stepping down, and this is going to make it a very interesting election to watch. She's not running. She's not on the ticket. And there's a whole lot of question marks about who's the next candidate going to be. All the major parties are kind of in trouble. All of the main leaders are struggling and are unpopular. Could you see a Germany ruled by a green communist coalition? Yeah, that's a possibility. A divorce and a political marriage that's lasted 70 years? Well, to continue the analogy, one side's already talking to their lawyers. So we are in uncharted territory with Germany, and that's something that is going to have that has a huge impact all around the world. I think it's easy to forget because Germany works hard not to remind people just what potential power Germany has. If they were to spend 2% of their GDP on their military, which is what America is always encouraging them to do, they would be spending more on their military than Russia. And then they're part of the European Union, part of a military alliance that includes France and Italy and several other nations. If they wanted to start throwing their weight around in the world, they really could. And so these elections in Germany are a big deal. And it's a big deal because of Bible prophecy as well. The Bible has a lot to say about Germany, and this is what Mr. Flurry wrote about in his trumpet brief. And he talked about the political situation in Germany in that trumpet brief, about how typically, in Germany, you normally have had this situation that's fairly similar to the US. You kind of have a main left-wing party, a main right-wing party. The main difference is then you've had kind of this dusting of coalition parties to kind of spice things up a bit. And the role that these potential coalition partners, these smaller parties, have played is normally just to provide the extra 5-6% that one of the main party groupings need to get it over the line and to have a majority. But that whole system is completely broken now. That's over. Several of these kind of minor parties are now major parties. There have been a couple of major polls now that have put the Green Party in first place in Germany. So they were in government, I'm trying to think when now, but it had been about 20 years ago. I think they had Joschka Fischer as the leader, was the foreign minister. But back then, they were winning 6% of the vote, 8% of the vote. So they had a role in government, but it was a fairly small one. It was a government that's already left-wing, and we'll give you like an environment ministry and foreign ministry, and you can have a couple of ministerial posts, and you can do some things with the environment. But you're not the big power in this coalition. You're not the driving force in this coalition. you are very much the junior partners. Well, we're in new territory now where they've been polling in first place. There's a very real possibility of a green chancellor. And actually, Annalena Baerbock is, I believe that's the leader of the Green Party. I didn't have that in my notes, actually. But I think she's probably the most interesting person in the race right now. The other candidates kind of just come across as these kind of typical, boring politicians. Yes, people are going to vote for them. But I don't think anybody is really all that excited about Armin Laschet, the Christian Democratic leader who's kind of in there to replace Angela Merkel, or I can't even remember the Social Democrat, the main left-wing leader. They're there. Yes, people will vote for them because they support their party. There's no excitement behind their program. That is very different, I think, for Annalena Baerbock. There's a real sense of enthusiasm behind her. Now, of course, that enthusiasm comes from the Greens, comes from quite the far left part of the political spectrum there. But there feels like there's real momentum behind her. Now, I think there's talk of the next coalition being a CDU-Green coalition, this coalition between the Conservatives and the Green Party. And that's possible. I don't think that's as unthinking or as unthinkable as it might be in, say, American politics. It's possible. And Angela Merkel has, you know, they got rid of nuclear power. She's done a lot of things that the Greens kind of like. So that could happen. But there's still a pretty strong kind of hard left element within the Green Party. Annalena Baerbock is not from that wing of the party, but it's still very strong. And that wing of the party would much prefer to do a deal with the left party, the successor to East Germany's communists. And you could have a Green Party, a left party, and a Social Democrat party, this coalition between Greens, communists, and Social Democrats. And especially the youth wing and some of the more extreme wings of the Green Party were going to be trying very hard to make that happen and to scupper any kind of deal with the Christian Democratic Union. Ambrose Evans Pritchard in The Telegraph, he wrote, "This is the stuff of nightmares for the German establishment." And he quoted Holger Schmeidling, he's from the German bank Berenberg, warning the party base will put the Greens to the hard left if they're in coalition only with other left-wing parties, or pull the base, the Greens, to the hard left. So the party base wants to kind of pull the Greens over to the left wing there. And, that's a big change for Germany, to kind of have Greens and communists running the country from Angela Merkel. So look at what you could have in Europe. You could have Marine Le Pen, this kind of extremist or extreme politician, as president of France, and then you could have the Greens and the communists running Germany. Mr. Flurry, in his trumpet brief, he wrote, "This is shaping up to be the most interesting German election in a generation. Bible prophecy shows why you need to watch closely." And so in that article, he explained that Angela Merkel's party, the CDU, that they're kind of in free fall in popularity, they selected Armin Laschet as their candidate to be Miss Merkel's replacement. And, you know, the leaders of the party selected him and like him, and then those kind of at the top. But party grassroots are not at all excited about him. The general public is not at all excited about him. A poll last week found 77% of CDU members thought their party had chosen the wrong man. That's not a very comforting way to go into an election campaign, where 4 out of 5 of your own party members think you've chosen the wrong leader for your party. And I think this quote was really revealing. This is an anonymous kind of party insider. So I guess somebody who is, in theory, at least fairly senior in the party, talking to Bild, Germany's most popular newspaper. But he wrote, "The weather is ugly." Or he said, "The weather is ugly. I've never seen anything like it before. Not in the refugee crisis or in the euro crisis." So we've had these big crises before that have kind of turned Germany against the establishment, where you kind of had a lot of the party members and the people being very angry with their leaders. And I think that made the news over in the UK, over in the US, the refugee crisis, the euro crisis. We could see what was happening. But he's saying right now, with this election campaign, it's even worse. There is more anger from people coming towards the establishment. And Spiegel magazine said, never has a candidate entered a general election for the CDU so torn and disheveled. And it's so bad now that the Christian Social Union is considering a divorce from the Christian Democratic Union. So normally these two Christian Union parties work together, and they have an agreement where the CDU, the Christian Democratic Union, runs in most of Germany, and then the CSU runs just in the state of Bavaria. It would be a bit like if there was some political party that only ran in Texas and they cooperated with the Republicans in the national level. And so they're sister parties. They've worked together for 70 years in general. They work together at the federal level. They unite behind a single candidate for chancellor. But actually, there have been polls showing that if the CSU ditched the CDU and went nationwide by themselves, they would actually be more popular than the CDU-CSU combine is right now. They could win popularity all across the nation if they got rid of the CDU. And there's always mutterings of discontent from the CSU, and, well, maybe we should go it alone and some of this kind of thing. But they've taken more concrete steps than I think they've ever taken before in this direction. In fact, I mean, this is remarkable. The CSU have begun offering online memberships to all Germans. So they're taking concrete steps now in this direction. You can join the CSU online, even if you're outside Bavaria. You can be anywhere in Germany now. They're getting ready to expand their party. And this could very easily be a first step to becoming this kind of fully-fledged nationwide political party. And Wolfgang Monschau, he's a veteran German journalist, he talked about this in his Eurointelligence news briefing. And he was saying, well, he was talking about how actually, well, a lot of German journalists kind of discount this as, oh, it can never happen. I think partly because of this idea of, oh, they always grumble about splitting from the CDU. They're not going to actually do it this time. But he isn't so sure. He disagrees. And he points to some local elections coming up, I think in June, and basically saying, well, watch these. If the local elections, if the CDU do terribly, then the CSU could divorce before the September elections, and there's still time for them to kind of run as an independent chancellor candidate or as an independent party. However, if that doesn't happen, if the CDU don't do absolutely horribly in this election, he says, well, maybe it will be after the federal election in September, maybe after that they'll split off. But even so, if that happens, that is a pretty big earthquake in German politics, something that is going to make a big deal, play a big role. So German politics is changing fast. Ambrose Evans Pritchard, he wrote, the Germany that most of us have known all our lives is about to change in radical, unpredictable ways. And that's something that we should pay attention to. Mr. Flory spoke about this upcoming election briefly in his Key of David over the weekend. Here's what he said in just one clip from that message. This is clip 3.
Now we have an election coming up in September, and Angela Merkel will no longer be there. She's retiring from the scene. And they're looking for a strong man in Europe. They feel that they've had weak leadership, and they want a strong man to be over and rule this European power led by Germany. And there will be 10 kings, as your Bible prophesies. But they listen, the Germans are a great people, but this Holy Roman Empire has been certainly a curse to them in many ways, if you understand the history of it.
So there's an appetite for a strong leader there, and for some decisive leadership, and we'll have to see exactly how this plays out in the elections. But going back to that trumpet brief, Mr. Gerald Flurry, he writes, this is critically important. A new strong German leader is one of the key Bible prophecies for the end time. Herbert W. Armstrong warned for decades about the arrival of such a leader. European nations are becoming distrustful of America and thinking more and more about uniting themselves into the United States of Europe. This is what Mr. Armstrong wrote in March 1950. But he said to do that, they need a new supreme leader, the successor of Adolf Hitler, to rise up and assert himself and take command. And Mr. Flory writes, I've been continuing the same warning since the Trumpet magazine's earliest issues. If a real crisis develops, will the Germans call for a new Führer? I asked in the December 1991 issue. Your Bible says that is going to happen. That crisis will probably be triggered by an economic collapse in the United States. So, and then in this article, he goes on to say, the change in Germany could soon provide an opening for such a man. Mr. Armstrong believed the CSU, this party that's talking about going nationwide, could provide that strong leader. And I have long said the same thing. This party's newfound popularity could help that happen. And we pointed to Karl Theodor zu Guttenberg, the German, former German defense minister, as a potential to be that strong leader. And, we'll watch. You know, that's his party, the CSU. So this will be really interesting to see how that plays out. And Mr. Flurry writes, however events turn out in Germany in the short term, you need to know where Europe is heading. A great place to start learning about that is my recent Key of David program. It gives you an overview of what the Bible prophesies for Europe and how it will soon change and how it will affect you. And we saw just a brief clip from that, but that is a great place to go to learn more about what the Bible prophesies for Europe. And this is a critical subject to understand. Like I said, this is going to affect the whole world. But I want to get into that a little bit more. But we'll take one more quick break, and when we get back, we will look about what the Bible says about a strong leader in Germany and why it concerns you, why you need to be able to prove and understand what is happening there. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Every particle of human suffering, unhappiness, misery, and death has come solely from the transgression of God's immutable law. Obedience to God's law liberates us from all unhappiness, pain, and suffering. It frees us from captivity, from spiritual slavery. Obeying God's commandments guarantees a life overflowing with joyful abundance. For much more on this subject, request a free copy of The Ten Commandments. When you make your request, don't forget to enroll in the Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course. This 36-lesson course is a distance learning program that will help you to get to know your Bible. Each month, you will receive a lesson that guides you in discovering the answers to life's most important questions, all from your own Bible. Your enrollment has already been paid for. Enroll today. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily show. I've been talking about some changes in European politics, in German politics, but in the last 10 minutes or so, I wanted to take you through the Bible and show you just one place, one prophecy that talks about a strong leader in Germany. Why we're watching for this kind of political transformation within Germany. And that passage comes in Daniel chapter 11. We do turn here quite a lot to talk about, well, there's a strong leader coming in Germany. But I thought I'd take just a little bit more time to go through this prophecy in Daniel chapter 11 than we maybe do usually. We have 10 minutes or so, and just show, well, why this passage is prophecy. How we know that this is something still to come in the future, because I think it's not immediately obvious maybe from a first read through that this is prophecy, though. Let's just have it before we start in Daniel 11. Let's read Daniel chapter 12 and verse 4. It says here, but you, O Daniel, shut up even the words and seal this book until the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro and knowledge shall be increased. So this book is for the time of the end. It contains some history. God was revealing the future to Daniel, and he revealed prophecies of men like Alexander the Great and some of these leaders that would come after Daniel lived. But this book and the primary purpose of this book is for the time of the end. That is when God had it in mind for this. So these prophecies are relevant for us. So now, if we go back to Well, we'll just have a look in Daniel chapter 3, or Daniel chapter 11 and verse 3, just to give an example of what I'm talking about here. So Daniel chapter 11 and verse 3 says, "And a mighty ruler shall stand up, that shall rule with great dominion and do according to his will. And when he shall stand up, his kingdom shall be broken and shall be divided towards the four winds of heaven, and not to his posterity, nor according to his dominion which he ruled. For his kingdom shall be plucked up even for others besides those." So this is a prophecy of Alexander the Great, for example, who would live after Daniel. And it's so clear, it's so obvious that just about all the commentaries look at that and say, yep, you know, this is talking about Alexander the Great. He conquered all this territory. He was a mighty king. He died. The kingdom didn't go to his posterity. It didn't, typically you'd expect a great king to pass his kingdom on to his children. That didn't happen. And instead, it was divided four ways between his generals, exactly as we see here. And then it goes on to talk about this Daniel chapter 11, the future of that kingdom and the fate of some of the successors of this kingdom. And it gives us a lot of bits of details about those that succeed, that ruled various different parts of this kingdom, until we get to Daniel chapter 11 and verse 21. And here it says, "And in his estate shall stand up a vile person, to whom they shall not give the honor of the kingdom, but he shall come in peaceably and obtain the kingdom by flatteries. And with arms of a flood shall they be overthrown from before him, and shall be broken, yea, also the prince of the covenant." Let's just look at verse... Well, no, we'll leave it there for now, but it gives us a lot of... It kind of slows down, the narrative does, and it zooms in on this individual and gives us a lot of detail. And you can look and you can know, you can look in history and you can know who this individual is. That this refers to an individual called Antiochus Epiphanes, who ruled in Syria. And we have an article on the Trumpet website, "Who is Antiochus Epiphanes?" that you could go to, if you like, from a few years back, if you want to learn more about this individual. And there's a whole host of different details about him recorded here. Again, it's so accurate that the commentaries know that this is talking about Antiochus Epiphanes. And this is a quote from the HarperCollins Bible Dictionary. They say, "No names are mentioned, but persons and events can easily be identified down to Antiochus the Fourth Epiphanes of Syria and his persecution of the Jews, which began in 168 BC. And they have this little note in here, which just is amusing. "We must infer that the accurate prophecy was written after the fact, and that the actual time of composition was during the persecution." So this Bible dictionary says, well, this has to be a forgery because it's so accurate. No human individual could have written this so accurately. And I don't know why you would bother writing a Bible dictionary if you just believe the Bible is a work of humans. And this really is proof that God inspired it and that God inspired Daniel to write this ahead of time, and there are numerous proofs to show that Daniel did live when the book of Daniel says that he lives. This isn't some kind of forgery, but it is remarkable prophecy here. But let's just catch one more detail about Antiochus Epiphanes here in verse 31. And it says, "An arm shall stand on his part, and they shall pollute the sanctuary of strength and take away the daily sacrifice, and they shall place the abomination that makes desolate." So there's going to be, it talks about this abomination of desolation here. And all of this is accurate history. It happened. But let's have a look in Matthew 24. I'm going to hold my place here in Daniel. Let's have a look over in Matthew chapter 24. And we'll see Jesus Christ himself in this prophecy says something very important in Matthew 24 and verse 15. And he says, "Wherefore, when you therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet stand in the holy place, whoso reads, let him understand." So that's a pretty direct allusion to the passage that we've just read. You know, he's citing that scripture, "when you see this abomination of desolation." But you know, when Christ lived, Antiochus Epiphanes was history. I think I skipped over the date there. I think sometime around 160 BC. He's long gone by the time Jesus Christ is on the scene. 168 BC, yes. So he's long gone. But Christ says, well, you need to be looking for this in the future. this is going to happen again. You know, Jesus Christ is telling us that there's going to that what is recorded in Daniel chapter 11, this is not just ancient history. Yes, it is ancient history, it is accurate history, but the book of Daniel is for the end time. This is really prophecy of the future. And so that's why when we talk about this Daniel 8 man, you'll hear us quite, well, Daniel 8 is a parallel scripture. When we talk about the strong man coming in Europe, coming in Germany, you'll find us quite often quoting these scriptures like Daniel 11 and verse 21, which talk about him obtaining the kingdom by flatteries. Yes, that described Antiochus Epiphanes, but it also describes what's coming in Germany. A strong man that comes in by flatteries. And you look at what that means in the Hebrew, and it means coming in by unorthodox routes, coming in not in the normal fashion. And so all of this political chaos in Germany is paving the way for a strong man to come in that flattery, in that manner, by some unusual way. But it's critical to understand this, that what is happening in Europe, what is happening in Germany is prophesied in your Bible in great detail. Now, all of these things are happening because God is in command. He rules. Bible prophecy reminds us of that. We understand, when we understand that these events are prophesied, well, then as we watch the news and as we see them happen, well, those events, they point us to God the Father. And you see these big changes in Europe, they point us to God, they point us to the Bible, and they confirm that it's a real authority in our lives. They point us to the fact that God has a plan. There's incredible hope here. And incredible hope in world news when we understand that this world news is all unfolding according to God's plan. And it's a plan for all of the world and for all of mankind. Well, that is all about I've got time for. Please do get in touch with us. You can shoot us an email at td@kpcg.fm. Thanks for listening. And we'll be back for now at the same time, same place here on kpcg.fm.